Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear, and I'm sitting in Predator Control Group's lure shed. And as I sit here, before I turn the recorder on, I'm absolutely dumbfounded how this has turned into what it is. I remember when I first started making lure, it was because I was spending so much money on lures myself, and I was buying them basically from one person. I was buying them by the pint, I was buying bait by the 5-gallon bucket, and I was doing a whole lot of beaver work at the time, and I just started going, I wonder if I could do a beaver lure that may not be as good, but good enough just to save some money, because I was really, you know, things were tight back then. And just from that, I think now we've got like 32 different products that we sell. I've sold to numerous countries outside of America. It's turned into a real job. And it all started with never intending to be a lure maker. Probably 25 years ago. So I'm just, as I sit here, I'm very grateful for the trappers that support me and the stuff that I do. But I'm always, when I sit down and really think about this, it is amazing that somehow, over decades, playing around turned into a real business. And I want to say thank you to everybody for that. But it's still, it's just amazing, because you never know where something's going to, where how things are going to turn out. But if you never take that chance, you're definitely never going to know. Now, I want to talk about several things today. And one of these, I'm not going to mention any examples because I don't want anybody to think that I'm referring to them, because I'm not. But there's been a few things that I've seen lately from guys, and I just want to talk about something shortly. Please listen to me on this. You are not your past. You are what you do today, what you do tomorrow, and what you do next year. Somehow, in our society, what you did yesterday has to always be what you are forever. And that is absolutely total bullshit. It is. Now, this is not a Man Strong podcast. This is a trapping podcast, and I'm going to put it in terms for trappers. But it goes for a lot of different things. You could have been a dirtbag husband or wife, but you don't have to be today. Just because you were doesn't mean who you are. You could be terrible at running a business, but that doesn't mean that you have to continue to do that. There's a lot of things in life that we all have, these things where it's, we, over time, we have this self-talk to ourselves where we start believing what other people say about us and what we say about us. And I'm here to tell you guys, that is, can be so detrimental to what it is you want to be. Now, if you do change today and be different than what you were yesterday, you're going to have to prove that to people around you, like your wife, your business partners, whatever. And it's probably going to take a long time for them to really believe what that is. But you see, that belief, that's on them. You can't control what other people think about you. You can only control you. That's all you got control of. And a trapper, I guarantee you, when they're not with other trappers, and they're not, you know, beating their chest on social media somewhere, or they're not at a convention trying to prove their worth or whatever. When you're in the dark by yourself and you're thinking and you're being honest with yourself, we all look back at different trap lines and go, oh, I screwed that up. That was me. Now, if you're not an honest person with yourself, you're never going to be any better. But if you're going to be an honest person with yourself, which I hope my listeners are, you can look around and go, it's just not working out. I want to do this in trapping. And no matter how I plan for it or how much I prepare for it, this always happens. Whatever that this is. And you're going to sit there and you're going to try to justify it. Don't do that. You need to look at yourself and go, okay, either I am a man and I'm going to be a leader for myself, or I'm going to be a big, sloppy, wet wussy about this and keep doing what I'm doing and trying to blame other people. So if you're going to be the big, sloppy, wet wussy, well, then just be a proud wussy. But if you're going to actually try to be better, you can never blame other people. You can't blame the weather. You can't blame the numbers of the animals you have. You can't blame the season. You can't blame your laws. You can't blame any of that. We've talked about this before. It is on you. And if you start looking at things like this, where it's on you, what can you do about it to change how your trapping season goes? I promise you, your trapping season will change. If you blame others, you have no reason to change, because you're going to be doing the same crap blaming others later. To some of you, this may make you very uncomfortable. I'm sorry. Because a lot of people, it's just the way our world is. Nobody takes the consequences for anything. People will lie, cheat, steal, manipulate, do all kind of stuff just so they're not the one that's in fault with what they think other people's do. Now, other people look at it and they realize you're full of crap when you're doing this, and they still know it's your fault, but it makes you feel better thinking maybe you convinced a few that it's not. As a trapper, it's you and what you catch. That's it. It's how you react to the weather. It's how you react to the numbers that you have. It's how you react to your terrain. It's how you react to new properties. It's how you react to landowners, how you react to competition, how you react to getting traps stolen. How you react is the only thing that you can control. That's it. But the power of understanding that you do not have to be the same wet slopping wussy that you was yesterday can change today. And I'm going to give some examples of things that trappers may not want to admit, but they know down deep is true, and they can change that really, really quick. One is they always find ways to quit. They're quitters. And once you quit, it's easy to quit next time. That's why when you get in special operation groups in the military, they try to make you quit. The worst part of going to any military school that's combat based, airborne school, ranger school, air assault school, pathfinder school, all of these schools, is you know for the first 4 days or week of that class, their whole goal is to make you quit. And they run you into the ground, and you watch people quit left and right, all around you. And some people can make it, and some people can't. Not physically. Anybody in the military can pass a military school. It's mental. But a lot of people, a certain percentage, quit. Well, worst case example is SEAL training. After BUDS, I think it's like 19 to 21% of the people make it. That whole thing of BUDS is to get rid of people that quit. It is mental. And anybody that does any type of serious training like that, they will tell you that it's mental. Physically, nobody can really do it. It's all mental. You just can't quit. But what happens when we're trapping? And it's too hot, it's too cold, it's too wet, it's too snowy. It's, you know, we're all fired up when we leave the house in the morning with our big thermos of coffee. And we're going out to set traps. And then about 2 o'clock, a lot because you trappers don't eat for trapping. They eat for, I don't know, like a factory job or a teacher's job or something. Or they eat stuff that blood sugar crashes. And it usually seems to be, for me anyway, about 2 to 3 o'clock. You don't feel as good. You don't feel as energetic. And all of a sudden, the next thing you do, you're coming up with things that you, quote, need to do. And you talk yourself out of doing what you wanted to do when you left the house that morning. I bet you every single person that's ever set a trap knows exactly what I'm talking about. And if you historically gave into that, when you knew you could have went and set another 30 traps or another property or something like that, and you made decisions to go, well, I haven't seen my friend in a while, he's just up the road. Or, you know, I've got some skinning that I need to do. It'd be nice to get to bed early tonight. Whatever it is, I mean, however you talk to yourself is going to be how you talk to yourself. But you quit on yourself, on your trap line that you have dreamed about kicking ass on all year long. In the first opportunity, or the second, or the third, you quit. And then after that, it's really easy to quit because now you've got a pattern, and I guarantee you justify to yourself why you're quitting. So you quit. And the self-talk that you give yourself is very important. Everybody has a dialogue that goes in their head, or at least I think they do, because most people I talk to will admit it. And I don't think it means you're crazy, but you do talk to yourself, especially when you're alone, especially when you're doing something like trapping. Even if you're not speaking out loud, you've got this dialogue going in your head. What am I going to do next? Where am I going to go after this? You know, is that a coyote track? Is whatever. You have this dialogue that's going in your head. How you refer to that situation at that time is massive. Especially if you know that you have, in your past, you're historically a quitter. Now, I know you justified it. I know they're important reasons why you do it over and over and over and over again. And you know you shouldn't quit. And you're going into this season, and in the back of your subconscious mind, you know that's what you've done for the last 10 years. You start off the season, you're going to run daylight till dark. Somehow, you're always at home 3 hours early. And when you look at your catch numbers, you go, I could have met my goals if I would have spent that time. Now, I used to carry a card, and I've said this several times, and some other people have posted stuff like this on Facebook, which has horrified my wife, where I used to have a pink card taped to the inside of my windshield, and it said, are you a blank USSY or a man today? So every single time I got in my truck, in my peripheral vision, I'm asking myself, am I being a wuss or am I being a man? And every single time that I would start justifying why I wanted to quit, I could not help but see that pink card because it stuck out like a sore thumb. And I would go, I'm not going to be that today. I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to quit. That was my way of doing it. Now, to some people, are not going to go to that extreme a lot because your wife may have a heart attack if she gets in your truck and sees it. You don't want your kids seeing it. I get it. I don't have kids. The only person that saw that was me and my dog. And I don't think Daisy could read. But if you start using words like shouldn't, I don't want to, tomorrow, I'm going to stay later. See, what you're doing is you're destroying your ability to stay strong. Subconsciously, when you say, I shouldn't, but, I promise you, your subconscious is going, that's a good reason. And the weird thing about our brains, according to psychiatrists, which I'm not one, your brain cannot decipher the difference between real and not real, if it's spoken or if it's seen. That's why when you watch action movies, your adrenaline actually starts releasing. You're in no danger sitting in a movie theater where John Wick whacks people left and right. None. But your brain's going, this is some serious crap going on right now. Your temperature rises, your adrenaline starts going a little bit, you kind of get excited. It's because your brain cannot, your subconscious brain cannot tell that that movie is not happening to you right now. Why do you think porn is so overwhelming for certain people? So how you talk to yourself is going to be a big difference. Whether you're going to be better today than you were yesterday. Because yesterday does not have to define what you are today. I am not going to stop before dark. Depending on what your background is growing up, you can use almost like sports analogies if you grew up in sports. I was not brought up to be a quitter. Quitters don't win. You can say all kind of cheesy little things to yourself. I don't care. Say them. Do not speak to yourself in a manner that allows you to quit. If I quit, I'm a wuss. I am not a wuss. Therefore, I do not quit. I don't care what you say. But I promise you, on a big percentage of trappers, the reason they don't meet the goals that they want to or have the dream seasons they think they should, even though they can justify it, it's because they quit because of a myriad of reasons. And the guys that don't seem to ever be bothered by anything, that just keep on plowing and grinding and scratching and catching, that never enters their mind. When I was trapping full time, a lot out of state, if the water froze at the house, call a plumber. If the roof's leaking, get a bucket. We don't have enough money for that bill. We'll figure it out when I get home. My mentality may have been a little hard for some people to grasp. When I was trapping, I was trapping. Unless China attacked and was in the area that I was in when I was trapping, I'd figure it out when I got back home. There was no way you were going to talk me into quitting or shorting myself when I was out doing this. That type of thought, as soon as it popped in my head, I was on that as fast as I could to get that out of there. Was I perfect? No. Nobody is. Now, a lot of, and here's one that's going to hit close to home to a lot of trappers. And again, I'm not talking to anybody in particular. But let's say you have a problem with drinking and drugs, and it affects your trap line. But you say and you want to be a better trapper, and you want to have this trapping season to be the way that you know that it could be, and you're allowing drugs and alcohol to affect that. That is you yesterday. Whether you, I guess, smoke, pop, or needle yourself today, or drink, that's a decision that you make today. What you did yesterday has no relevance on what you're going to do today. It's easy to fall back in that habit because that's what weak people do. Are you a weak person? You don't have to be. You can be a weak person yesterday. You can be a strong caveman today. You can be disciplined today, even if you weren't yesterday. So if drinking way too much, hangovers, all of that is screwing with your trapping, and you really want to be a better trapper, don't let what you've done in the past negate, I guess is the right word, what that's going to mean for you today. I've been with trappers that are known drinkers, known partiers, well-known killers. But do you know what didn't happen when we were trapping together? I never smelled alcohol on their breath. They never had a hangover. They went to bed early, and they got the job done. They weren't partying while they were seriously trapping. Not a lot of people that knows their reputation would have a hard time understanding that. That was their reputation. That's what people thought about them. That was kind of their identity until it came game time. What they did at game time had nothing to do with before that. It was amazing to watch. They may have threw a bender on when we got done that lasted for a month. I have no idea. But they had the discipline to turn that off and on when they needed it. A lot of people don't push themselves. They don't know how to push themselves. They've never had to push themselves. They get tired quick. They let that ruin the rest of their day. Their hands ache and they think that they've got to baby them. Their back hurts. Their knees hurt. It's cold. I'm tired of sweating. It's whatever it is. A lot of trappers just don't push themselves. And if your habit is to always give in and not push yourself, it's really easy not to push yourself. But at the same time, don't be mad at the results you don't get because you don't do the work. You didn't do the work. You didn't push yourself. Now, someone listening to me right now that goes out and sets 12 traps with his kid and checks them, you know, before they go to school in the morning, this is not really pertaining to you. But there's a lot of lessons here in other parts of your life. I'm sure it could. And it's a great thing to be able to teach a young trapper. You're tired? That sucks. Let's go. I don't know if I want to. We made a commitment to trap this week. Get in the truck. We're going to set 10 traps every day. But Dad, I'm tired. And well, we got one more trap to set. A lot of good lessons that can be taught from trapping to young guys and girls, for that matter. We've talked about trapping with kids. I'm not saying you kill them, but you can actually instill some discipline in them where they don't start thinking that they're a quitter and they can't push themselves. One of the reasons that I talk about weightlifting so much is if you're going to be get any results from that, you have to push yourself. So to some of you grown men out there that really fall apart under pressure, I highly recommend that you get into something like strongman or powerlifting. Why? Because you're going to have to push yourself. The more you push yourself, the more you realize you're not going to die. And in most men, whether they ever admit it or not, there's this little button that most guys that have been professional trappers definitely know about. Is when things get tough, you get tougher. When you're tired, you push harder. You get a sadistic pleasure from really pushing yourself. The problem is most people today in our modern society is so soft, they never get to experience what it's like pushing that button. But just because you didn't push it yesterday doesn't mean that you can't push it today. You're not who you were yesterday. You are who you are today. Maybe you haven't been a planner. Maybe you don't get permissions. Maybe you run out there and just frail around and wonder, get frustrated because you don't make the catches that your buddies do or that you see on Facebook or something like that. Well, start planning. Discipline, a lot of people look at as it's almost, the way Jocko explains it is they look at it like it's a punishment. Discipline, especially to a trapper that's going to do more than just frail around. As Jocko puts it, it's freedom. Because without it, you don't get to do what you want to do. You can daydream about it, but you don't get to live it. So if you're going to be better than you were yesterday, and you're not going to be the faults that you had yesterday, you need to be the most dependable person that you know to yourself first. If you're supposed to set 70 traps today and that's your goal, you set 70 traps. You have to be dependable. If you're leaving before dark, you have to be dependable enough to leave for yourself before dark. If you need to push yourself, you need to be dependable enough to yourself to do that. Because if you're not dependable to yourself, don't think you're going to be, other people are going to look at you as being a dependable person, because you're not. That's like the first rung. You have to be dependable to yourself first. That's what makes that change where your past is not who you are today. If you're not dependable, your past will just keep repeating itself. And what trapper wants to be the same as they were 5-10 years ago? I know a lot of guys, and I've been with a lot of guys, that does not have the self-control when something goes sideways. A flat tire, clutch goes out in the truck, someone steals a trap, you lose a property, on and on and on. And what do these trappers do? They throw an absolute 2-year-old temper tantrum for a day or more. And what happens when you're in that type of emotional state? You make dumb decisions. They make sense at you at the time because you're a raving lunatic, screaming and hollering and wanting revenge and all of this stuff. And you know who gets hurt? You do. Every time. And the reason when I hear people say, trappers say, well, I just get mad and it's just who I am. No, it's not. I just can't control it. I just go black. That's bullshit. Because if you are throwing a temper tantrum on the side of a road because someone stole a trap, and you're screaming and hollering and stomping and planning murder and all this type stuff, and a state trooper pulls over behind you, I guarantee if we had a camera on you, you would switch personalities in a minute to get that state trooper away from you as fast as possible. Because you're already in that state, right? So if you can't control it, you would probably start screaming at the state trooper, throwing stuff at the state trooper, trying to beat the state trooper's butt. Everything that you're going on emotionally before he gets there, but that doesn't happen. You know what happens? How you doing? Having a rough day. Everything okay? Yeah, it's good. What are you doing here? I'm trapping. Yes, sir. No, sir. Stuff like that. If your preacher shows up and you're throwing a fit with your wife, do you keep throwing the fit, trying to hurt each other the way that you are, or do you calm down and try to act like nothing was going on? So you can control it. But I've been around guys, and I've been on trap line with guys that will waste half a day every day being furious about something. And if you're one of those people, you know it when I'm talking this subject. You don't have to. The scariest thing about the military having to do anything in America with civilians is civilians go into panic mode, frustration mode. They have no self-discipline whatsoever, for the most part, under stress, because they live in very little stress. Your friend deleting you on Facebook is not real stress. Getting a ticket is not real stress. But that's the only stress you know, so that's your level 10. In the military, you get to experience stress with no sleep, very little food, and you're exhausted. And this is done for a reason. So when bad things happen, it's just a normal thing. Stress is just normal. And if you throw an absolute hissy fit, you're going to get punished severely and quickly. So you learn, just like everything else learns, that that's not a smart way to deal with stress. Now, if you've never been in the military, especially in a combat arms, you may not have ever experienced anything like that. Someone steals your trap every day. Get a flat tire. Your waiter's got a hole in it. Your gauntlets are leaking. It's raining. You left your rain jacket. You run out of fuel. And then the temper tantrum starts. And you spend all that energy throwing a two-year-old hissy fit. And every minute or day or hour that that happens, you're absolutely going backwards in your trapping. Have you ever been around somebody where it's got a flat tire? We'll figure this out. You lose property, you'll figure it out. Someone steals your trap. Man, that sucks. I've even trapped with a guy that allowed himself 2 minutes to be mad. And he would rant and rave and stomp, and I sat back and watched him. And when 2 minutes was over, it was like it never happened. That was his way of dealing with it when something crazy happened. Flat tires from mesquite thorns. You're in the middle of nowhere and you're trying to figure out how you're going to get back home. Most people just melt down. What's productive going to come out of that? So if you're one of these fit throwers, You don't have to be that way today. When something comes up, there's a phrase in the military that we use all the time that everybody knows what it means if you hear it. Work the problem. You don't scream about the problem. You don't stomp the ground and plan revenge and murder. You work the problem. You work the problem. What's the problem? Got a flat tire. I need to get rolling. How are we going to get this fixed? Can I call somebody? Can I get a record? Do you have AAA? Do you even know where you're at? Do I need to walk somewhere? Do I know, is the landowner, can I get a hold of the landowner? I'm stuck. Do they have a tractor to pull me out? You work the problem. And I don't care if you're 50 years old. If you've been throwing fits on trap lines your entire life, you don't have to do that today. You really don't. Again, I know y'all are tired of me talking about this. If you're so out of shape that you can't do what you physically want to do, change it. I don't care if you're 500 pounds and 5'2". You can start changing that today so you can meet your goals and be the trapper that you want to be. That's all I'm going to say about that. But just because you've been so out of shape all your life doesn't mean that you have to be that way into the future. That's not who you are. You are what you do today and in the future, not what you've done in the past. 'Fore we get to our next subjects, guys, I want to thank our sponsors. We have really good sponsors. We have sponsors that are honest. We have sponsors that get your stuff out to you as fast as possible. They're good prices, good customer service. I'm really proud of the sponsors that I have on Trapping Radio. The first one is F&T Fur Harvesters, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Most of y'all know who they are. If you need it, they got it. And they have a tremendous shipping process that they go through to get it to you as fast as possible. And they don't play games with clickbait and overselling and all that other stuff. You don't have to worry about that with F&T. Next one is Oki Cable and Trap. He's out of Oklahoma. He's got a full line of trapping supply. He's got snaring stuff. He's a fur buyer most years. He's just one of the really good guys that if you need something, you can call him. If you don't have it, he can probably find it. That's Jeb. Next, we have Funky Trap Tags and Supplies, which is also a sponsor of Manstrong. They have full line of trapping supplies. They got stuff for fishing. They got stuff for hunting. They got tremendous deals on predator calls, copper trap tags. They've got lures and baits and traps and everything. You see them at conventions, Allen. Just good people. The kind of people you actually want to do business with. And we have Dunlap Lures, which is Jeff Dunlap, which is a good friend of mine, which I hope to be seeing here not too long. Run some traps with him up in Michigan. He's been in the lure business for a long time now. He's got a tremendous business because he works his butt off. And he builds good lures and baits. He takes pride in that. Now, we joke all the time between the two of us of which has got better baits. And I don't think one's better than the other. I'll never tell him that because that's not how guy friends handle each other. But if I couldn't get mine, I'm getting Jeff's. Because I know the pride that he takes in that. That's Dunlap Lures. So I've got a couple of questions that I've got that I want to go over quickly. This is kind of an odd one, but I don't know where you're at on this. It says, what would you plant in a hedgerow that could stop deer from getting through? I'm wanting to funnel deer past my deer stand and piss off my power tripping neighbor. Now, I don't know where you're at. I'm assuming from your email address you're in Kentucky, but I'm not quite sure of that. I'm going to give a couple of recommendations because I think you're in Kentucky. But please listen to what I'm getting ready to say. Anything that'll make a hedgerow that deer can't get through can get out of control really quick. I think the best hedgerow that you can ever plant, and there's people out in Kansas and Oklahoma and places now, when they hear me say this, they're going to start cringing and cussing and screaming at their computer. It's Osage orange. You know, things got the hedge apples on them. That is some of the hardest wood you will ever get, and it grows like crazy, and it spreads like crazy. Did I say it spreads? And did I say that it has thorns? But that is hands down the most impenetrable hedgerow that you can plant. But if you let it get out of control without keeping, like with a bush hog or something, where you keep it where it's supposed to be, it'll take over anything. Any good hedgerow plant will do that. Now, the second one is, if you get caught planting this, your neighbors may actually castrate you, so be very careful with this. But if you want something deer can't get through, privet. Chinese privet. It's on every hit list of every state game warden, biologist, plant biologist there is. Chinese privet is different than regular privet. Privet's what you had in England when they used to do the hedgerows. And if you can find that, I would rather use that. But being in Kentucky, I bet you can go to any creek bank or field and start digging up privet, run it down that fence line. Within 2 years, you're not going to be able to see through it. In 4 years, you're going to be topping it off. And in 5 years, it's going to be popping up in places you don't want it. So you're going to have to control it. It's pretty much evergreen, especially in Kentucky, because I think that's where you're at. Osage orange is not evergreen, but it grows in this weird way that it's like something out of a horror movie that intertwines with each other, that nothing can go through that. You want a funnel deer? Both of those will do it. You want to have it where your landowner that's next to you can't do anything about it? Both of those will be it. That's what comes to mind. Now, you can plant evergreens and stuff like that, but they're slow. Years. Privet and Osage orange, 3 or 4 years, you got a wall. So that's not really trapping stuff, but that was a question I got, so I thought I'd go over it. Now, here's one. Sorry I miss seeing you in New York. I hope you're feeling better. I have a question about 4-Trapping Radio. I work a lot out of state, and I don't know exactly where I'll be working. I've tried to scout a lot of areas so I can trap to and from work when I get the call to go. I understand boots on the ground scouting is best, but I'm wondering if you have any tips for cold rolling in unfamiliar areas and for any permissions I can get on the fly during the season in parcels of public land I come across. And he talks about the school. He puts on a podcast. Give me a call. Yeah, we can do your podcast. I don't mind doing that. What you're talking about is if you don't know where you're going and you're trying to run trap lines, I'm going to tell you how I used to do it when I would go places like North Carolina, Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, Florida, the different places that I would just go. I would always buy, and this is before, keep in mind, what I'm talking about is before the age of the internet. I would always buy a gazetteer. You can order them online for any state. It shows waterways. It shows big blocks of woods. It shows all the roads, and I mean all the roads, pretty much. And it's in a large enough scale, because like in a book for a state, you may have 40 pages. So you'll have a big map in the front, and you'll look and you go, well, I'm going to be down next to Dover. I'm just making that up. So I'll find Dover on the big map, and that's on page, say, 22. And next to it is 23, and above it is 14. And you can like make you a bigger map out of what's around Dover. And what I used to do is I would find all the public ground that I could find, and then I would see how much was going on in there as far as creeks and rivers and swamps and fields and different stuff like that. And then I would kind of mark those where they looked hopeful, and I would spend actually several days a lot of times before I went somewhere, and I would really go over everything. Like, this creek flows as a big creek. If I'm going after otter, for example, this creek flows, you know, for a long, long way. How many roads does it cross? How many levees or anything like that that covers that for a long distance? Can I go down one side then come up the other side? Because there's going to be bobcats and beaver and coon and coyotes and all that too. So I would look at these, and then I would try to build a route off of the best grounds that I could find. Now, if there was two or three that set off by themselves, if I have time, I would hit them. But I would try to somewhat, you know, not the circle thing that everybody talks about where you want to leave and come back. And mine looked more like, I guess, throwing down spaghetti and wrapping it around structures. So it may be a large road that's easy to pull off, and it's got several creeks that cross it. I may go down it, and then say maybe 20 miles to the east or west, there's another road that, you know, that goes through a lot of agricultural area, and it's got, say, I don't know, crawfish ponds, and there's a bunch of big swamps and big farms. So I can see these two, then I would try to get a route to hook so I could get as many location set between the two good routes, come back down the other one, then find a way to get back home and still hit the best ones of that time. Today, it's a little easier with a computer. You can get on Google Maps and put it on the setting where it's the satellite picture, and you see way more detail. And you can just follow a creek. Now, the interesting thing about just following that creek, it's easy to get lost. I would probably still have a gazetteer sitting there next to me, and I would match that up with what I'm seeing on the computer. And then I would look on the gazetteer and go, this looks really good. Let me start zooming in Google on that. But I mean, you can get down to where you can almost see the make and model of somebody's truck in a field. So you can really see, you can see beaver dams, you can see all kind of stuff from Google Maps. So even if I didn't know where I was going, once I got there, I would start trying to find the best areas that I could trap. And then I would try to figure out how to hook them together to make a route. Some of those were actually dead-ended. If it looked good enough, I may drive 20 miles and have to turn around and drive 20 miles back if it looked good enough. When I was out in Iowa cold rolling coon, I just basically, okay, this got somewhat decent amount of water in this area. Everything's got corn. And then I would try to find the routes. What I was doing is I would try to find not the main looking routes, but the routes that are off of the main routes that may have me doing a lot more turns. but it kept me out of a lot of competition. And what that also allowed me to do is I would get in pockets, believe it or not, in Iowa for 10, 12 miles and not see another trapper, which when coon prices were decent, that says a lot. And I would have to find different type of locations when I was doing that for coon, which thank goodness Red showed me how to do that. But I wouldn't pick the most obvious ones, and here's a reason for that. If you've got competition in an area, the most obvious places to set traps is where everybody's going to go and set traps. When me and Ed were out in New Mexico, we pulled out the gazetteer. We were up in a high mesa area. We wanted to go to the big mountain area of Lincoln National Forest. So we pull out the gazetteer and we're looking around this, and lo and behold, there was a road that was like 30 miles that made this loop right on the edge of about 9,000 feet outside of Lincoln. Well, that's where we need to go. Look at that. It looks like it's a decent road. It covers 1,000 different draws. It's high elevation. The cats are going to be really, really good, which they were amazing cats. But we found all kind of other people's sets. And not even where sets were active, but where sets have been. Now, this was... Twenty years ago. Since that time, all I've got to do with anybody that's ever trapped around Lincoln, and they would tell me the road that we trapped on because it was so obvious. All the locals trapped it, and everybody running through there trapped it. We caught some cats. We couldn't figure out why we didn't catch more cats until like 10 years later, and I've already had 30 different people tell me about this road. That's because everybody took cats off. There's only so many cats. You have 40 people taking one off a 30-mile stretch, it's going to eat into your numbers. So I learned a lesson from that. I'm not going to pick the most obvious, juiciest looking route. I'm going to pick one that's it's a little less juicy. It's not the filet mignon. It's more like the top sirloin, but it's with a cook that knows how to really cook it. I'm going to go for this. I'm not going to go for the high end because that's where everybody's going. That's just something I've picked up over time. Now, once you use the gazetteer and Google Maps and you kind of get a route together, now what do? Well, if you're in a state that allows road trapping, you're golden. If you're in a state you have to have permission, now you've got to go get permission. How do you do that? Well, you can do plot maps, which seems to be more of a Midwestern thing. We don't have them here in Tennessee. I mean, you can go to the courthouse and sit there, but it's not the same as I've seen people like in Iowa. When I watched Bernie Barringer show a plat map for the first time when I got back from Alaska, I was dumbfounded. I went to our courthouse, and they looked at me like I had four heads. They only had one. They ain't giving it out, and they don't sell them. So that didn't do me any good. But apparently, in Iowa, you can just order one. So if it's somewhere like that, get a plat map because it tells you who the landowner is. And with today's internet, you can find out how to call them. My wife, because she used to work for the state, and she had to be able to pull up people's property or to see if they had property they weren't claiming to get benefits, she got very good on a state website, which I'm not very good at, I'll be honest with you, but you can probably figure it out, where it's like an electronic plat map. So, like, if we're looking at a piece of property that's got a for sale sign on it, and we don't know who owns it, she can go off of the road and the different houses, and she can, just like a plat map, and she can look at it, and then she, right there in it, it's going to say who owns it. A lot of times it'll have a phone number or an address. Using technology today, there's an app that you can get that's called, I believe it's U-Hunt or X-Hunt or something like that. U-Hunt. I think it's U-Hunt. A lot of people use this, like if they're out in Colorado hunting, because you can go from private land to federal land or vice versa, and there's no fences and there's no tree lines and there's no anything, but you can get in trouble 10 feet over here and not trouble 10 feet over there. So what this app does is it tracks you and it shows you every single parcel of property. And you can do it from a distance. You don't have to be there. You do it kind of like Google Maps. And it'll tell you who owns the property. Then you'll have to do some research to get the number for the guy that owns the property. Because if you look at the property and there's no structures, well, you know someone's not living there. But you got the name. You put the name in. It was phone number for so-and-so. You know, the county, the street. You know, as much information as you have, and you can find a lot of these numbers. So if you're going out at a place you don't know where you're at, and you have U-Hunt on your phone, and you see a piece of property that looks good, you can pull up your phone, and it'll tell you who owns that property. Which is really slick, and here's the reason why. Because if you see somebody out there, or you see a house, and a guy comes out of the house and you pull up in the driveway, it's a big difference to go, Mr. Smith, my name is, and I saw this property and I'm a trapper. If you have his name, psychologically to the person you're asking permission for, it's very different. If you have to ask his name, he knows you're 100% stranger, which you'll find out soon enough. But if you have his name, it's a big win for you. And when you go up mass permission, like I've said in other past, in other shows, try to look presentable and try to look like the local people look. If everybody there wears blue jeans and a dress shirt, like cowboys, you dress like that. If you get in Tennessee and a lot of the farmers are wearing blue jean overalls, you get you a pair of blue jean overalls and a t-shirt and a ball cap that says John Deere on it. So when they see you for the first time, psychologically, you're actually part of their group. You're not a book salesman or Jehovah's Witness or someone trying to sell them a vacuum cleaner or anything like that. If you've got a lot of tattoos and you're in a very rural area, cover them up. If you've got really long hair and you're in a rural area, stuff it up in your hat. Red O'Hearn, when he first started getting permissions in Mississippi, I think it was for 2 or 3 years, he kept his hair up in his hat because he used to have long hair. Well, the farmers in northern Mississippi don't have long hair. He didn't want something as simple as long hair to not allow him to get permission to trap. Because all it is a barrier. Now, is having tattoos and long hair a real issue? No. It's all about first impressions, because when you're trying to get property, that's all you have is first impression. Now, when I normally meet somebody for the first time, and I know that beaver's a problem, that's the first thing I'm going to lead with. I don't lead with the word trapping. I lead with beaver. I was just wondering if you've seen any beaver around here. Oh, them sons of bitches, they got all these fields. Now we got common interest. Now we're rolling. I do the same thing with coyotes. I bet you got a lot of coyotes around here. I wish somebody would get rid of them. Well, this is your lucky day. And then you start the conversation. If it's a farmer and they have a lot of corn and they're in, or it's something to do with deer and they got a lot of feeders, raccoon is your in, not the coyotes. And for goodness sake, don't start off with bobcats. That's the weirdest, weirdest response you'll get from people is bobcats. Some people are like, yeah, get them. Most people are like, but they're so pretty and I like watching them. Use the word predator. You seen any coyotes? Yeah, man, I hear them overnight. Sound like we got 1,000 of them. Well, this is your lucky day, man. I'm a predator trapper. That's what I do is trap predators. Where are you hearing them at? The thing about getting permission is you're selling. You're selling you and you're selling your skill set. Most importantly, you're selling what you're going to do for that landowner. That landowner don't care if you need to catch coyotes to meet a goal or to make a house payment. It's not his problem. You catch coyotes to make his life easier, you got a better shot of getting the permission. If he don't have to go down as much with a track hoe and tear out beaver dams, you're making his life better. Beaver aren't flooding his fields, his life is better. You learn to use language just like a salesman does, and before anybody gets all upset about saying this is like sales, it is sales. Everybody sells every day. You want to have sex with your wife? You got to sell it. Everybody sells every day. When a kid wants to go somewhere on the weekends, they got to sell it. You want to go hunting with your buddies? You got to sell it. Unless you live completely alone and by yourself. Selling is just, if you look at it in a different term, it's like for me, for existence. I know somebody wants to catch more coyotes. I'm going to tell them, if it was me, I would use the hammer, boss dog, and federales. One of those combinations. And I can say that because I've used it enough, and enough people have used it, that I know if they actually go and they have the skill set to put a trap in a good location with a decently bedded trap, with a decently realistic-looking natural set, they're probably going to catch coyotes, and their life is going to be better because they get to catch a coyote. Me selling them that lure, there's nothing dirty about that. If your roof's leaking and you don't know how to fix a roof, people are going to come out and fix your roof. They've sold you that they can do the roof. There's nothing dirty about selling. But when you're trying to get permission, you are absolutely selling what you can do for that person, you and your skill set. If they don't cuss, you don't cuss. If they cuss, you cuss. It's just selling. You want them to think that you're not just some absolute stranger that's going to come destroy their area. Always ask them, is there any places you don't want me to go? Is there, and go, if it's muddy, I'll use the four-wheeler. I won't take the truck. I'm not going to leave your gates open. If I see anything going on, if I have your number, I'll call you if something's out or whatever. Everything is going to be helpful for them. You rut up their roads, that's not helpful. You see a fence tore down and you tell them about it, it's helpful before they lose livestock. If they have you there because of predators and that's what you get permission on, and all of a sudden you see a beaver swamp and they're chewing down a bunch of trees and eating corn, let them know. Hey, I'll be glad to take care of this, but we kind of had an agreement on predators, but if it'll help you, I will get those out of here for you. Go get them, man. Your wording and your attitude has to be, this is going to be good for you, and here's why. So that, I mean, I don't know if this is going to help you on going somewhere that's totally, you've never been before, but that's kind of how I would handle it. I would definitely try to find the best places and then try to hook them together and then try to get the permissions on the places that I can. And once you get someone's permission, you have a trump card that most people don't have because you now can use their name. Hey, Mr. Williams, I'm doing some predator work for Mr. Smith. And he was talking and saying maybe that you're hearing coyotes over here, and if it's okay with you, I would like to take care of those for you. See, what I just said right then is extremely different. Is my name is Trapper Billy Bob, and I want to trap your land. What's that got to do with the landowner? What's that going to help him for? Oh, Mr. Smith said you're hearing coyotes. I'd like to take care of those for you if that's okay. And then the conversation will start. So that's what I would do. It's Halloween, guys. And I thought I would do something a little different at the end of this show. And it is a toast. So, if you're drinking something, hold it up. Here's to cheating, stealing, fighting, and drinking. If you're going to cheat, may you cheat death. If you're going to steal, may you steal a woman's heart. If you're going to fight for a brother. And if you're going to drink, come drink with me. And I'll see y'all next week.